feature in the season ahead. Wilde Frang and Mikhail Luftitz back on the platform. Wilde currently on a tour of the great European festivals this summer, as well as the proms. She appears at the Kumo Festival in Finland, the Gestadt and Verbier Festivals in Switzerland, and at the Kaposvár Festival in Hungary. She and Mikhail perform later in the year in New York, Geneva, Rotterdam, and they'll be back here in the UK performing at LSO St. Luke's. Bringing us to the end of this first Proms Chamber Music Concert live from Cadogan Hall in London. Back here again next Monday lunchtime. Do join us then. For now, very good afternoon to you.
Petrock Trelawney there at London's Cadogan Hall. And as he mentioned, that concert on Monday was filmed, as indeed all the Proms Chamber Music Concerts are going to be this year. Do go to the Proms website and follow the links to see the whole of that concert online and what's in store over the season. And Petrock will be back at Cadogan Hall this coming Monday lunchtime to introduce a BBC Proms debut by one of the most accomplished of vocal ensembles on today's early music scene, the Huelgas Ensemble, and their founder-conductor Paul van Nevel. Their programme's built on and around the little-known repertoire of choral music from Renaissance Poland, most of it rarely heard these days, some of it, in fact, only recently rediscovered in the archives of the University of Warsaw. Alongside the Polish music are works by 16th-century composers from other corners of Europe, including the great Italian Luca Marenzio, the Dutch-born Johannes Vanning, and Christoph Demantius from Bohemia. That's the BBC Chamber Prom this coming Monday lunchtime at 1 o'clock.
At the BBC Proms and live on BBC Radio 3, Viva Verdi.
They need another fill.
The second in a pair of concerts from Sir Antonio Pappano and the orchestra of the Rome Academy of Santa Cecilia includes the four sacred pieces and from the Requiem, the dramatic Liber Arme. Saturday night at the BBC Proms from 7:30.
Well, looking ahead and after the Proms this evening, way off the beaten track, Newsnight's culture correspondent Stephen Smith asks whether it matters that travel writing is notoriously unreliable. That's way off the beaten track at 9:45 here on Radio 3 this evening. And it's followed by our contemporary music strand, Here and Now, music by Graham Fitkin and Juste Janulitz, recorded at the Vale of Glamorgan Festival. Ivan Hewitt in conversation with Graham Fitkin during Here and Now, and that's at 10:30 this evening. You're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's just gone 3 o'clock, and coming up at 5, Alan Shipton will be here to introduce more of your jazz record requests. But now, once more, from the stage of Cadogan Hall here in London, here's Clemency Burton-Hill with the first of this season's Proms Saturday Matinee Concerts.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to Cadogan Hall for the first of this year's Proms Saturday Matinees. It's wonderful to see so many of you here. Today, we are capturing a moment in time when a young Handel, just 22 years old, journeyed to Rome to absorb himself in contemporary Italian music, and in particular, that of the virtuosic fiddle player and musical trendsetter all round, Arcangelo Corelli. None of the pieces on today's programmes have ever been heard at the Proms. Sophie Bevan, the soprano, and the Academy of Ancient Music, directed by Richard Egar from the harpsichord, will be guiding us through a pair of Handel's vivacious Italian cantatas, and we'll be hearing them in the context of some of the music that Handel would have been experiencing while he was in Rome. Two of Corelli's most popular concerti grossi, which had such a direct influence on Handel himself when he came to his own subsequent treatment of the form, and also a four-violin concerto by Corelli's younger contemporary Giuseppe Valentini, whose music is extremely distinctive, as we'll hear, but is not very often played. Now, threaded throughout the programme are also a series of keyboard interludes for figured bass by Bernardo Pasquini, who was something of a superstar harpsichordist of his day, as well as a very prolific teacher and composer. These aren't performed very often either, so it will be a real treat to hear Academy of Ancient Music director Richard Egar, along with Alistair Ross, to provide that contemporary colour and context. Now, before the Academy of Ancient Music opens proceedings with Corelli's Concerto Grosso, Opus 6, we'll hear the very opening of Pasquini's Sonata No. 1. So please join me in welcoming to the stage Richard Egar. Corelli's Concerto Grosso, Opus 6, No. 1 in D Major, performed by the Academy of Ancient Music, directed from the harpsichord by Richard Egar. And before that, that beguiling vignette of music for two-figured bass by Pasquini, we heard the opening bars of the first sonata performed by Richard Egar and Alistair Ross. And I'm delighted to say that Richard Egar, despite working so hard already this afternoon, is joining me here on the stage at Cadogan Hall for a very brief chat.
Yes, indeed. Richard, welcome everybody, welcome.
Very little of Handel's output survives before he gets to Rome in 1706, but what sort of impact did it have on his music once he got there?
It seemed to inspire him to create a vast output of fabulous music. A lot of the music that he composed in the Roman years, particularly even in the first year from 1707 onwards, all these cantatas, there's many duets for two voices, for soprano alto, which he wrote. He produced an immense amount of music, which he basically lived off for the rest of his life. He recycled a great many of the tunes from this time in later works, which we know and love in Acis and Galatea and Messiah. But it was really, it must have been an incredibly inspiring place, the richness of the place artistically and musically. It was just an incredible inspiration to him, obviously.
Opera was banned at the time, he wrote about 80 cantatas while he was there, at least. What sets these songs apart from the rest of his repertoire?
They're secular in nature, so they're sort of, it was just sort of getting around the problem by setting it within these incredibly rich households of the cardinals. So they had these slightly strange things, Arcadian academies, where they would sometimes dress up as nymphs and shepherds. And they all had their own Arcadian names, so it was all a little bit strange, but very, very decadent. So this was a way of bypassing the fact that opera was actually banned, and a lot of these cantatas are secular in nature and have very, very secular messages, often to do with love or unrequited love or all sorts of that kind of stuff.
Rather scurrilous themes. Well, we're going to hear one of them in a moment, Pensieri Notturni di Fili, and to perform it, the leading young soprano, Sophie Bevan. Sophie, looking absolutely ravishing here on stage at Cadogan Hall, has also agreed to have a very quick word with me. What are these cantatas like to sing?
Actually, the first thing that struck me when I was first handed these cantatas was how low they are, which makes it quite challenging to sing. I think at the time that Handel was writing in Rome, the pitch was far lower than what we're used to now, especially for me. And it's the sort of tessitura that I'd usually associate with a mezzo-soprano. But it's been interesting for me to sort of shift my voice. I'm speaking, that's why I'm speaking so low right now. I have to sort of keep it down there. But also because the da capo aria is fantastic because you get to ornament and you can sort of take your voice back up to where it usually sits.
You've sung a lot of Handel opera in your time. How do these differ?
Handel, I think the thing about Handel is that he writes so dramatically for the voice. It's always about the words. So even with these cantatas, you know, it's all about the drama and the colour. And so in that sense, it's a sort of similar experience.
We were just hearing from Richard that many of these cantatas have rather scurrilous themes. Can you tell us what this one's about?
This is actually rather less scurrilous. It's about Phyllis's nightly thoughts. And as she sleeps, Cupid paints a picture of her love, and she sleeps soundly and contentedly. But it's only when she wakes up that she feels pain at the enjoyment of deceit laughing at her.
Wonderful stuff. Well, we're looking forward to hearing you, Sophie Bevan, perform that cantata in just a moment. Pensieri Notturni di Fili, along with the Academy of Ancient Music, directed by Richard Egar. They're going to have a brief tune now on stage, and then we will hear it. Thank you.
Chicken.
Sophie Bevan and members of the Academy of Ancient Music performing Handel's Italian cantata Pensieri Notturni di Fili, and the recorder soloist was Robert Ehrlich. They were guided from the harpsichord by the Academy of Ancient Music's music director, Richard Eger. Richard, first of all, let's start with talking about pitch. Sophie mentioned that they're very low and you're choosing to play them at 392, which is actually even a bit higher than they would have been played.
The Roman pitch, or at least one of the Roman pitches at this time, was 380-something, which is well over a tone below modern concert pitch. So those of you who are pitch-sensitive either in the hall or on the radio and thought we just played that last cantata in B-flat major, I'm afraid you're wrong. That was C major, but it just... Pitch was not constant, and actually still isn't constant, but particularly in the Baroque period where there were very many different pitches. But we know that Corelli was playing at around 380-something towards 390, so it's a convenient pitch for us to play at 392.
And that was specific to Rome?
It was Rome. It was also in France, at various centres in France. Venice was high. That was 440 or 466. So depending on where you were, you needed a different set of instruments for different places.
We're going to hear the music in a moment of Giuseppe Valentini, about whom we know very little. You described the piece earlier, the sonata for concerto for four violins, as bonkers. Why is it bonkers?
I think Pavlo had a wonderful description of it in the rehearsal the other day. He said it was very hypnotic. It's very repetitive. in a sort of good sense, in that there are large blocks of material which are repeated over and over again, and you sort of get into this hypnotic groove, rather like perhaps when listening to Philip Glass or minimalist music. So it's sort of early maximum minimalist music. But it's incredibly fun to play, but it's some very, very strange sort of head-banging noises, particularly in the last movement.
We're going to hear before that another of those Pasquini interludes, and I'm really intrigued by these because we don't get to hear these very often either. Mm. They were sort of just, what, they exercises? What actually
we,
were they?
We don't quite know what they were written for. They survive in a manuscript, and they are literally sonatas for two figured bass lines. What Al and I are doing are playing off two just bass lines with figures above them. So everything you're hearing above these three fingers, we're making up as we go along. It was part of the training of a keyboard player was something called partimenti, which was learning to play music from a figured bass, and particularly fugal music from a figured bass, just off a bass with figures. So it was very much a discipline of keyboard players those days. But these are very extraordinary in that they're written for two figured bass players. And perhaps they were used in when opera was being performed. In most Italian opera pits, there were two harpsichords in use. So maybe they were used as little interludes in operas, but they're certainly not given enough airing, and they're really jolly fun to play, particularly with Al in the background.
And jolly fun to hear as well. We'll be hearing all of Pasquini's Sonata No. 10 in just a moment, and after that, Valentini's Concerto for Four Violins in A Minor, performed by the Academy of Ancient Music.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Concerto for Four Violins in A Minor by Giuseppe Valentini, performed with such breathtaking virtuosity there by soloists of the Academy of Ancient Music, led by Pavlo Bezhnoziuk and directed by Richard Egar. Now, in just a moment, Sophie Bevan will be returning to the Cadogan Hall stage to perform the second of our Handel Italian cantatas, Tra le Fiamme, Among the Flames. Most of Handel's Italian cantatas were scored for just solo and continuo, but this one is exceptional in its rather extravagant instrumentation. As well as the violins and all the usual suspects, it calls for a pair of recorders, oboes, and a solo viola da gamba, all of which you can probably hear gathering behind me on stage at Cadogan Hall. Drawing on an analogy of butterflies and moths and their attraction to flame, the text tells the tale of Daedalus and Icarus after an allegorical poem written by Cardinal Benedetto Pamphili, one of Handel's Roman patrons. Among the flames you playfully dart, O my heart, to make you happy, and are deceived by a fine beauty. 1,000 butterflies fall into the fire, but there is only one phoenix which rises from death. Richard Egar and I were talking earlier, and he suggested that the text of this was possibly rather subversive. Now, Handel, as we heard, was better than anyone at plundering his own output. And for the opening of this cantata, he drew on an instrumental piece from his 1707 opera Rodrigo, and later on in the cantata, Apollo e Daphne, both of which he'd recently composed in Florence. He then later took tunes from this cantata and used them in his other works. As I say, we're going to be hearing Sophie Bevan in just a moment, but first I believe the Academy of Ancient Music are going to have a little tune. Tuning of the Academy of Ancient Music, almost a rather beautiful musical interlude of its own. But now to join them, please welcome back to the stage to perform Handel's cantata Tra le Fiamme, the soprano Sophie Bevan.
Sure. Thank you.
soprano Sophie Bevan performing Handel's cantata Tra le Fiamme, Among the Flames, at this prom's Saturday matinee here at Cadogan Hall. Sophie was joined by the Academy of Ancient Music under director Richard Egar. Well, in just a moment, after the orchestra have had another tune, we'll hear the second of this afternoon's Concerti Grossi by Arcangelo Corelli, the number 12 in F major, also from his Opus 6. Before that, we will have time for one more of those sonatas by Bernardo Pasquini for duo figured bass, basso continuo. The first two movements of both his second and his seventh sonatas, performed as before by the Academy of Ancient Music's music director, Richard Egar, and Alistair Ross. Corelli's Concerto Grosso, Opus 6, Number 12 in F Major, performed by the Academy of Ancient Music, led by concertmaster Pavlo Beznosiuk and director Richard Egar. And before that, we heard the first two movements from both Sonata Number 2 and Number 7 by Bernardo Pasquini, performed by Richard Egar and Alistair Ross. A sold-out concert hall here at Cadogan Hall, absolutely loving this programme, focusing on Handel in Rome. We heard soprano Sophie Bevan performing those two Handel cantatas earlier. I believe she is making her way back to the stage now. Here she is, back on stage. Sophie Bevan. And it looks as if she's going to sing an encore, more Handel, I imagine.
Tudorcello from his early oratorio Il Trionfo del Tempo e del Disinganno. Thank you.
soprano Sophie Bevan and the Academy of Ancient Music performing Tu del Ciel Ministro Eletto from Handel's opera Il Trionfo del Tempo e del Disinganno, The Triumph of Time and Truth, an encore here at Cadogan Hall for this first Prom Saturday matinee. We'll be back for the next Prom Saturday matinee on the 3rd of August when mezzo Sarah Connolly is the soloist in the first of four programmes exploring centenarian Benjamin Britten and his circle. I very much hope you'll be able to join us then. Meanwhile, from Cadogan Hall, it's back to my colleague Jonathan Swain at Broadcasting House.
Clemency, thank you. Clemency Burton-Hill there, and there'll be another chance to hear this afternoon's Saturday matinee Prom here on Radio 3 in Afternoon on 3 on Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Meanwhile, there's another live Prom this evening from London's Royal Albert Hall. Antonio Pappano presides over a Viva Verdi concert. Pappano conducting the Rome Santa Cecilia Academy Chorus and Orchestra in Verdi's four sacred pieces, movements from the Requiem, and an orchestral version of Verdi's String Quartet. That's live from the Royal Albert Hall here on BBC Radio 3 at 7:30 tonight. And during the interval, three Verdi experts, Roger Parker, Flora Wilson and Semyon Bychkov, explore Verdi's attitude to religion. Well, back to the present, and in just over a quarter of an hour or so at 5 o'clock, Alan Shipton will be here to introduce more of your jazz record requests. For the moment, back to the Baroque, the French Baroque via Ravel. Ravel wrote his Le Tombeau de Couperin during the First World War. A tombeau is literally a tomb. Perhaps a better translation would be tombstone or monument. In fact, Ravel said the tribute wasn't so much to Couperin himself as to 18th century French music in general. It was also his memorial to friends who'd been killed in the First World War, each of its six movements bearing a dedication to one of those friends. I wonder if you didn't know that, if you detect the melancholy behind some of this music. In a sense, Ravel makes the dedications to his friends a little more obvious in the orchestral version he made of four of the pieces, with, for example, a few last post resonances from the trumpet. But in a sensitive performance, that sadness comes through in the piano version too, perhaps even more so. Six movements altogether in the piano version, and we've time for four of them. The pianist is Stephen Osborne.
Thank you.
Tombeau de Couperin by Ravel. The first three movements, and that toccata was the last of the movements, played there by Stephen Osborne. The music itself first heard in 1919, and it turned out to be Ravel's last piece for solo piano, though the two piano concertos were still to come. In fact, the premiere of Le Tombeau must have been quite an ordeal for the pianist Marguerite Long. Her husband was one of the friends killed in the war. Ravel had remembered in the piece that final toccata was in fact dedicated to him.
Join us each night this week at 11 for highlights from the Lake Junction stage at the 2013 Latitude Festival. Composer Anna Meredith crosses the boundary between concert hall and festival stage. Multi-instrumentalist Nancy Elizabeth conjures up old English folk traditions. And the electronic duo Walls dig deep into the archives of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. And on Friday at 11, we begin a weekend of broadcasts from that leading festival of world music, WOMAD 2013. Latitude and WOMAD 2013, BBC Radio 3 at two of the UK's most diverse music festivals. Join us each night this week.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's a little after 5 o'clock. Time now for jazz record requests. And in the chair, as usual, here's Alan Shipton.
Good afternoon. There's a good mix of styles and periods today, with some strong British contributions from John Dagworth and Tony Kinsey, plus trips back in time with Louis Armstrong and Jelly Roll Morton. Poet and jazzophile Michael Horovitz dropped me a line saying, on a recent JRR you mentioned interest in frequently played jazz standards which relate closely to others. Two of my favourites, he says, are Horace Silver's The Preacher, which is pretty close to Show Me the Way to Go Home, and also to Basin Street Blues, which has struck me from way back as not that far distinct from Franz Liszt's Liebestraum. If observing this qualifies me for a request, says Michael, I guess my vote would be for the original studio recording by Silver with delicious rippling riffs and harmonies. The Preacher. Horace Silver and the Jazz Messengers recorded in Rudy Van Gelder's parents' living room in Hackensack, New Jersey, on the 6th of February 1955. The band, Kenny Durham trumpet, Hank Mobley tenor, Horace himself on piano with Doug Watkins bass and Art Blakey drums. Jim Thorpe sent a long list of possible requests, and my eye was caught by this one. John Dankworth and his orchestra with Curtain Up, featuring Kenny Wheeler on trumpet and Ronnie Ross baritone in the lineup.
Thank you.
Up, the title track of John Dankworth's 1960 album. Full personnel: Ronnie Simmons, Leon Calvert, Kenny Wheeler and Gus Galbraith, trumpets, Tony Russell,